This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Oh, man, I'm loving Doge, baby. Loving the waste, the fraud, and the abuse. Getting cut. It's great stuff. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Democrats are melting down. You have not even began to hear the worst till I play this song for you this hour. Welcome to the show. 855-839-12-TON. On X at Rich Zeoli. It is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And remember, it's never too early to start making your summer vacation plans. Go to GrandHotelCapeMay.com. GrandHotelCapeMay.com. Joining us now, he is the author of the must-read book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. He is Dr. Wilfred Riley, and he joins us now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Dr. Riley, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. Good to be back on the show.
So the Obama Pod Save America bros were all saying that they wish they'd thought of the Department of Government Efficiency. There's a whole other group of Democrats who are screaming about it and singing chants and songs. And one New Jersey congressman named Donald Norcross actually yelled F Trump at a rally yesterday in New Jersey. I think these Democrats are once again playing this all wrong. What are your thoughts on what we're witnessing here?
Well, I mean, I think if I were a Democrat and I knew the Doge was there, it wasn't going anywhere. I mean, Trump's not getting rid of Elon Musk and these people, at least for a year plus, and probably ever. What I would want them to do, my suggestion would be that they do things like audit the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. You know, I would try to focus on, you know, there's just as much crazy spending from the right. You know, what are the military organizations doing with all their money? That, as much as I love the troops, is the home of the $257 hammer and the $590 screwdriver with no point. I mean, you know, what about the spy agencies that have the black budget that goes nowhere? I mean, what are we teaching about, you know, feminism in Iraq through those organizations? So that's what I would do, actually. And in Chicago, like, the unions actually do this. Like, every year there's a report released by the Chicago Tribune, which is a conservative leaning paper, that documents, you know, wastes of money in the left wing sector, education and so on. And the unions will release a report that documents wastes of money in the business world. And a lot of those are absolutely hilarious. Like, which country club do executives get a free membership to and that kind of thing. So that's what I would try to do with Doge if I were on the left. Like, I would try to spin it so that all the waste is being trimmed. But about half of the Democratic Party doesn't want to do that. Like, the idea is just that government inherently is good. I think that's what we're seeing.
Hmm. But they just want to fight everything Trump does. And they tried this last time, and it didn't work for them, but they're doing it again. I think what they need to do, I mean, I don't want to give them any ideas here, because I'm happy with the current makeup of Washington, but would be to try to go back to their roots of getting the white working class voters that used to make up a Democrat coalition. But, I mean, John Fetterman, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, said this the other day. He said they've lost that. He doesn't think they're going to get him back.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get him back for a while. I mean, so the Democrats, and this is a process that's been going on for a long time. I mean, you saw a small but real move away from the Democratic Party during the Civil Rights era. But then, I mean, things just kept going on. I mean, you saw Reagan running against guys like Carter, and you saw more sort of regular, mostly white guys, but working class guys move right. I mean, you saw the Democrats take a pretty radical position on abortion policy after Bill Clinton. You saw more people move right. So by this point, I think when you think of a white guy, maybe even a black Spanish guy in a state like Tennessee, ball cap on, you know, belongs to the pipe fitters union, played some football. I mean, I no longer think that's coded as liberal at all. I mean, that would be coded as sort of like a MAGA bro, as someone who's 100% going for Trump. And you're also seeing the Republicans make that shift. I mean, the Republicans used to be seen as kind of the main street party. I mean, you had George Bush, Mitt Romney, all these patricians and aristocrats. And now, I mean, I think with Trump and Vance is from Appalachia, they're kind of saying, well, we still favor a strong military and all that, but we're gonna take another look at these populist policies. So they're kind of stealing some of the Democrats' thunder.
That's good. I mean, that's what they need to do. And I've been saying this for a while. I mean, Bernie Sanders used to say this stuff, and the Democrat Party did everything they could to push Bernie Sanders aside and destroy that movement because they couldn't control him. I mean, they're a party of control freaks, and that's very obvious in what they've done. I mean, they had a chance in 2016 with Bernie. They had a chance in 2020 with Bernie. They did everything they possibly could to make sure he would not be their nominee. So a lot of those same messages of populism. I mean, he resonated with a socialist message, obviously, and Trump is resonating with a capitalist message. But, I mean, it was still a theme of populism, right, of smashing the corporations. That's why when Bernie votes against Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Bobby Kennedy was saying to him, you know, listen, man, you've taken all this money from Big Pharma, it's a little laughable at the turn the Democrat Party has taken to become the party of Big Pharma, for example.
Yeah, I mean, so I think, I don't think any populist message is ever going to be like full-throated, even as capitalist as you or I probably are. Like, go in the market, compete, join the army if you fail. I don't really think that's even what Trump is saying. I mean, when you look at a lot of the things on the right, like a cutback on H-1B elite immigrants, you can be for or against that, but you can't really say that's a purely capitalist pro-market move. I mean, the whole point of that move would be to take the people that are American, you know, Caucasian or black or whatever, college graduates that, you know, in SAT terms are frankly 50 or 60 points behind those guys that were coming in, and give them a chance. And I mean, coming from, you know, the Appalachian region, I would generally back that. But that's not like all in, you know, diamond hands kind of stereotypical Republican stuff either. Trump is just, there are enough capitalist policies out there that people view his general thrust as being kind of market friendly. And I'd say it mostly is. But one of the things that I say when I do professional writing is that I think there are generally real economic or religious reasons that underlie like culture war stuff that we see, like their innovations in technology or declines in Christianity or something explain what look like glib little trends on their surface. Mm-hmm. So like Sanders is an old school Democrat. And we might think of him as kind of an honorable opponent. We might not agree with him, but he's bringing forward the Democrats' message that works with white working class people, where he's saying, look, if we're going to do anything other than pure capitalism, let's base it around class. So if you're a veteran or you're a lower income working man, let's give you health care. I mean, that's what Sanders is talking about. Sanders, until a couple years ago, never mentioned race at all. The problem is that the Democrats have kind of moved past that because the Democrats are no longer the working class party. And I think, I don't want to go on a long ramble here, but I think that's because of what industries are powerful in America. So it used to be that Republican-coded industries like steel, farming, I mean, you could think of 10, were the breadbasket of the country. They were the moneymakers. Now, if you look at the biggest industry, it's what, tech, followed by Hollywood. I mean, like, the richest guys are Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos. So those are lib-coded things, and the richest people are liberals. Elon Musk is the one exception, but, like, Jeff Bezos is even richer than he is most years. I mean, that's the Google guy, you know.
Amazon.
But the Google guy is a liberal, too. Bill Gates Bill Gates is the COVID guy. I mean, all of these guys are now the most powerful business people in the world. And, like, Mark Thompson from All Steel is, like, 100 down on the list. So, anyway, the Democrats have moved away, I think, from pitching these economic issues to pitching social issues, like, among upper-middle-class people, who is oppressed? Is it black women or whatever? And that's what we're seeing a lot of. And Bernie, I think, wanted no part of that.
And I don't think John Fetterman wants any part of that now. That's the message that he's trying to give to the Democrat Party, which is you got to move away from this woke crap. But today they were doubling down on Capitol Hill. You have a member of Congress talking about reparations. We actually have the audio of that, Matt. What clip is that? I know I saw it here somewhere. We have a ton of stuff, and then I want to ask you about the 500-pound rapper and the Lyft driver. I got to ask you about that, Dr. Wilford Riley.
All right.
That's a lot of fun, but DeSantis, where's that clip? You know the one I'm talking about?
I don't. There's so much on there that I lost track of it, I think.
So one of them, I think it was Representative Presley, talked about reparations on Capitol Hill today and said, you know, look, they did this with the Japanese after the internment camps. They did this with a lot of the Indians. So it makes sense to do it with black people. So, I mean, the Democrat Party's still talking about crap like reparations. And the mouthpieces they have are people like her and people like AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and then Maxine Waters. And then to get in on the fun, you have guys who were at one point considered to be, I don't know, I would say more, people are going to yell at me for this. I'm not saying he is, but his perception was, I'll be a more moderate blue-collar Democrat. I was a plumber. I'm talking about this guy, Donald Norcross in South Jersey. You know, I'm a plumber. I'm a white guy. I'm a little bit of an outlier. That was his whole message, right? But I'll play this clip of him. This is cut number 9 now at a USAID freakout session, because it's like, well, I got to join in the crazy, because crazy sounds fun and I don't want to be left out of this now. Cut number 9.
Seemed hopeless in the heart of the Jim Crow stuff. KKK was very active. Situation seemed hopeless.
And I'll tell you, I'm from Jersey, so I look at it a little differently. I say, Trump!
There you go. I mean, this is, it's F Trump. I mean, what are you doing here? You know what I mean? What are you doing?
Well, I mean, my hope as someone who's probably going to vote Republican in the next couple of elections is that the Democrats keep doing this stuff.
So
obviously there are issues the left is better on than the right. I mean, I think if you look at national polling, healthcare probably is one of those. It's actually really hard to think of that many now that, I mean, you've seen Trump get involved with environmental issues, now that there's a conservative environmental foundation. People used to say science, but I mean, again, these are people that have trouble figuring out how many sexes there are. But there are coherent things the left could pitch, healthcare, trade deals, or unions. I mean, so there's a package they could take forward against the Republicans. It's basically Bill Clinton's package, where he said, you know, we're not going to tolerate high crime. We're not going to tolerate mass migration. Clinton wasn't even for gay marriage, but we're not going to be cruel along racial lines. And I do back a national healthcare package. That would probably be pretty successful. But the problem with that is that over the now 15 years since Trayvon Martin, I mean, this is like 2012, the political left has allowed itself to become infested with this nonsense that comes from upper middle class infighting. So you've got Black Lives Matter. That's where Ayanna Pressley and Cori Bush came from. They were activists in that movement. You've got, what's the Muslim equivalent, CARE, a Council for American Islamic Relations. You know, we recently found out that Ilhan Omar actually did marry her brother. I mean, I always knew she did, but it's no longer a rumor.
She's the brother.
People are,
Sorry.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, actually. But yeah, I mean, just like all this crazy stuff, like all the transgender stuff, all the gay stuff. And I mean, you can't just kick that out of the platform. Like,
no.
If you look at the Democratic Party platform now, what's it, 37 pages long? Like, 20 of them deal with this stuff, abortion, feminism. So the John Fetterman types that are like, hey, guys, what's our position on NAFTA? Because we usually outfence the Republicans on NAFTA. Can we talk about that? You know, Trump's talking about tariffs. Like, those guys are kind of sitting at their own table, like, saying real stuff but being ignored. So, like, I'd love to see Cori Bush run for president against J.D. Vance. I mean, I think it'd be a Dukakis-level defeat. But that seems to be very possible. It's hard to get rid of an internalized religion.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look, I mean, I think the Democrat Party, it's possible they could go to the way of the Whigs here in terms of this. I mean, the two-party system's here to stay, and obviously the Democrat Party on the local level is very powerful in a lot of American cities, no question about it. But in terms of on the national level, they may win the House back, but before we know it, we're going to be talking about the presidential election of 2028. And when all these Democrats go to run for president, South Carolina, Iowa, is anyone going to try to occupy that lane that Bill Clinton tried to occupy in the early 90s? Like, does Josh Shapiro say, I'm going to step outside of crazy and I'm going to present myself as a centrist? But if you do, do you have a shot of winning in this Democrat Party, considering that they've let so many crazy people into their party? Or is the only way to win to just out-crazy the other? Because we know that in primary elections, you get the most diehard people that vote, which then perpetuates the problem,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, if I were Josh Shapiro, frankly, what I would do is lie in the primary to get elected and then do whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a problem with the... You don't necessarily need to take ethical advice from me for any kids listening, and you know, talk to a teacher or priest or whatever. But I mean, like that, but that is a political activist is what I would do. I would just say complete BS. I would get elected, then I would do whatever I want. Trump did this actually quite well as a businessman when he was asked about Project 2025. Now, I know he's not going to embrace the like chastity until marriage stuff, but like he just said, you know, never heard of it, never heard of the thing. And now if you look at his governance, obviously, Chris Ruffo, Jeremy Carl, like a lot of guys who are affiliated with that are working in the administration. So, you know, Shapiro could do something of that kind. But what you said is pretty much correct. I mean, basically, we have a two-party system and we have a primary system in the United States. And this is where the actual political science comes in. So, I mean, the primary electorate for each party is like 15% of the population, and they swing very hard to their respective fringes. So, if Josh Shapiro ran against J.D. Vance in a general election, everyone would be overjoyed to see two sane candidates and Shapiro might win. The question is, can Shapiro get through the initial Democratic vetting process? And I'd have to say the answer there is probably no, if he's honest.
Yeah, probably no. And also because he's Jewish. I mean, I think that plays a big part of it. I think there's a lot of right anti-Semitism in the Democrat Party. I mean, you see that with the brother effort.
Yeah, you're seeing that all across the board right now, actually. I mean, if you log on Twitter, it's not really Republicans, but it's like dissident right-wing types are talking about Jews, and you've got black guys talking about Jews, you've got leftists talking about Jews. Ilhan Omar is an open Jew hater, and so is Rashida Tlaib, who's someone who has a picture in her office of a map where Israel's been replaced entirely with, quote-unquote, Greater Palestine. So, I mean, it's a tough time for Jewish people right now. I mean, they need support. Hate crimes against Jews have always been proportionately the largest group of real, actual hate crimes. They've about doubled. So I'm not really sure what's going on with anti-Semitism, except that there's always been this kind of sneaking suspicion of this high-income, small group that's known for being merchants. And that's coming out right now. But it is an important point that it seems to be coming out more on the left than the right, because we hear constantly about like these edgy right wing guys, like, did you hear there's someone in the government nicknamed Big Balls? But we hear a lot less about the fact that there's a political party that wants to recognize Palestine. Like, I mean, so I think that's pretty relevant.
I just, you know, big balls coming out of your mouth just sounds funny. That's all.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, it is pretty funny.
It's a great line for Private Parts. I just love it. Dr. Wilfred Riley's with me. And if there's anyone who knows about fake hate crimes, it's him, because he's the author of the book Hate Crime Hoax, also author of the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Let's switch over to DEI for a moment. Disney announced that they were getting rid of one of their DEI initiatives, which is following a lot of what corporate America is doing right now. But I want to play a little flashback for you. You're familiar with this. This is March of 2022. During a staff meeting at Florida's reenactment of the Parental Rights in Education Bill, where they called it the anti-gay bill, that lie that they said back then. This is one of the Disney executives who said this back then. This is cut number 24. Chris Rufo obtained this quote. Cut 24.
Watching, you know, all of the classics. They have been a huge, like, informative part of my life. But at the same time, like, I worked at small studios most of my career, and I'd heard, you know, hear whispers. Like, I'd heard things like, oh, you know, they won't let you show this at a Disney show. And I'm like, okay. So I was a little, like, sus when I started. But then my experience was bafflingly the opposite of what I had heard on my little pocket of, like, you know, proud family Disney TVA. The showrunners were super welcoming. Meredith Roberts and, like, our leadership over there has been so welcoming to, like, my, like, not at all secret gay agenda. And so, like, I feel like I felt like it was, I mean, like, maybe it was that way in the past, but I guess, like, something must have happened in the last, like they were turning it around, they're going hard. And then all that, like, momentum that I felt, like, that sense of I don't have to be afraid to, like, let's have these two characters kiss. Let's in the background. This, like, I was just wherever I could, just basically adding queerness to, like, to, if you see anything queer in the show, I'm proud of it. But, like, I just was like, no,
right,
one
you,
would
get,
stop
you get the
me.
Point. That's
no.
Enough. Enough. You get the point, Doctor. I mean, it's painful to listen to. But I mean, does Hollywood get a wake up call now? Do they recognize now that the people have had it with this nonsense?
I think so. Yeah. At a certain point, you have to I think there's only so much that people will sacrifice in terms of their core business to look cool. And as someone who, when I was in business, was focused on money, the extent to which people want to look cool at all is a little weird to me. Like, if you look at the video game design teams for major studios, it's like 50% attractive women with multicolored hair and this kind of stuff. Like, there's very consciously an image that brands try to present. Kendrick Lamar at the Super Bowl is kind of a good example of this, actually. Like, I don't think he did a terrible show. He actually came pretty close to the viewership record for the Bowl. But the viewership record is only a little over 100 million, and that's a lot lower than the number of people that watch the game. And you can't help thinking that if you rounded up like Garth Brooks or Metallica or something and just threw them in the middle of the arena and had them play five songs, like, you would do substantially better than that.
Yes.
It just wouldn't be edgy. It would be a very obvious thing to do, but it's just clearly true. So it's kind of the same thing with this. I mean, obviously no one wants to see gay characters kiss in a Disney cartoon. It's just a clear thing. I mean, the target audience is young, mostly right-wing parents. But it was viewed as a hip way to transmit kind of new culture. You know, female bisexuality is now part of Disney. Who doesn't like that? This kind of thing. I think that when you see movies set like all-time viewership lows, at some point you just have to ask, what do people want? And that as with art, it tends to be just kind of classic stuff. Like, the most popular public art in my city, we did a poll a couple weeks ago, was like Roman style statues. Like, people thought almost everything else was garbage. I do myself.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point you have to kind of just stop experimenting and do the stuff people like. I'm kind of going around the point here.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it was rude to boo Taylor Swift at the Super Bowl? So I do not, by the way. I feel like she inserted herself into politics. I thought she did it in a condescending, snarky way when she endorsed Joe Biden. And hey, if you're going to play in that, you know what I mean? Plus, I feel like she can handle it. She looked shocked when they were booing her. Like, she couldn't believe it. But it does say a lot about how I think celebrities believe that they are, like, above us in a way. And so their endorsement should count more. I guess there's something when you become at that level where you really do think you maybe walk on water. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, first of all, like, that's the Philly sports fans will boo Santa Claus, and they did. Like,
that is controversial. I'm not so, you know, there's all kinds of stories about that. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't, and he probably deserved it anyway.
I mean, I've seen the clip, and I think Santa was from either Philly or New York. He's yelling at the audience. Like, it's funny stuff, man. But I mean, if you go to one of the big cities, Philly, Chicago, you know, New York, and you are the lover of the other team's best player, yeah, I'm not surprised that people are going to boo you. You know, I mean, so that, no, I don't view that as all that ridiculous. I do think you saw two cultures cross there, where all the Swifties online, who tend to be young upper middle class women, were asking questions like, if you go to a football game and you wear the other team's colors, does that just happen? Will people try to fight you or something? And it's like, yeah, it's a weird pattern, weird mix there. But no, I didn't view it as any horribly offensive incident. I'm not even sure it has all that much to do with politics, but I mean,
yeah,
you know, Michael Jordan
so
said this pretty well
annoying.
When he said Republicans wear sneakers, too.
I mean, she's just annoying and showing her face every 5 seconds. I think by the time the Super Bowl came, we had all just had it with that. You know what I mean? Just had enough.
Yeah, I think so. I also think that one of the things with that is that everyone who's a conspiracy theorist, including myself, knew that the NFL, it's not like they rigged the games by more than a few points, but the NFL would have really loved to see a Chiefs win followed by Travis proposing.
Yep.
And there have been a lot of these subtle asides, like between the Kelce brothers, like, hey, got that special present kind of stuff. Yeah, it's what, a week before Valentine's Day. I'm pretty sure like a ring would have gotten pulled out if the Chiefs had won by 10 points. So there's this whole backstory here of why are the cameras focused on this woman? Why has this been going on for a year? You know, and nobody really hates Taylor Swift, but okay, she's dating the other team's best or second best player. She came out for the political candidate we don't support. Like, enough of this. I'm not surprised to see that at all, honestly.
And you ask any Buffalo fan, and those referees should have been in arrested on the spot after that game. I 100% agree with that was what their plan was. They tried to orchestrate that. They wanted that. The ratings would have been huge, they thought, and blah, 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 which is why most of America was rooting for Philadelphia. I think they saw through it. I really do. I think we're smarter than they give us credit for. And I think people saw that. They saw through it. And so people, like my brother-in-law, who lives in Buffalo, or near Buffalo, Rochester, but was rooting for the Bills, obviously. And he said, it takes a lot for America to root for a Philly team. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what was, that we were America's team going into that game, without question. Because everybody, I think, could see through what the NFL was trying to do. Our eyes are open now. I don't want to use the word woke, but we are now maybe red pilled to how we're manipulated by all these various things, including even the NFL.
Yeah, and I do think that I don't think there are a lot of plots behind the scenes that involve hundreds of different people from different organizations, the Catholic Church and the colleges or something. But I do think that when people within one powerhouse organization say obviously leading things that then happen, there's a good chance something's going on. I remember actually Bush, just before I think the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, said something like, you know, anytime terrorists could start sending dangerous chemicals like anthrax through the mails and attacking Americans, we'd have to respond to that. And within like 2 weeks, people started sending bags of white powder to the White House, and we were like expanding our military campaign. And, you know, like you do wonder about that kind of thing. Like, obviously there are, you know, dark agencies that, you know, run these sort of dirty tricks campaigns, and the NFL is at a much lower level, but did they have a camera trained on Travis on the sidelines, and had he had a better game, would something have happened? Yeah, probably. 75% chance.
I think you're right. I would have taken that bet, my friend. Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me by Dr. Wilfred Riley. I'd be remiss then if I didn't ask you before you leave, since you did write the definitive book on what's happening in schools, in classrooms. Trump said today the Department of Education has to go. It's a disaster over there. It's time to give it back to the states. Of course, he's also taken steps to officially take bio dudes out of women's sports. His executive order saying we got to end the indoctrination in schools. This is all great stuff, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the biological males playing sports with women was kind of a no-brainer. Like, that's an easy win that the right was held handed because the left just refused to do anything about it. I mean, it's amazing that this has been an issue. Like, the question of whether someone with a penis is a woman.
Right.
Like, with intelligent people discussing this for 10 years. So, yeah, Trump basically ended that, at least at the level of collegiate and Olympic competition, which the president can regulate. Good for him. The Department of Education is an interesting one. I don't really think the Department of Education does anything. So a lot of people kind of misunderstand what the Department of Education is. Like, the idea is, well, doesn't that run the schools? No, the Department of Education doesn't operate or manage a single school except for, I think, three charters. What the Department of Education does is create the curricula around, like, LGBT acceptance education that the schools use. And I don't see any particular reason that a typical state, Missouri, couldn't, you know, dust off some plans from prior to the past 5 years of insanity and, you know, go back to what they used to do. I don't necessarily think we need a large bureaucracy to keep track of that. There are a few things, like administering a standardized intelligence test, that we probably do want to do, but those could simply be transferred somewhere else.
Dr. Wilfred Riley, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Pick up the book today. Always great to talk to you, my friend. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Thank you.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rizzioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
And we got a lot to get to today on the show. We are just loaded up. You know, Sean, I think my call screener might be frozen, so maybe you could be kind enough to let Dr. Riley off the hook there. I can't disconnect him from here for some reason.
No, I disconnected him.
Oh, good. You did? All right, good. Thank you for that, poor guy. All right, so when we come back, I'll tell you about our live broadcast next week. All right, so we're going to do that, and we're going to talk about that. Plus, Mark Fogel, he was released, finally back. Trump said today it's a shame that Biden didn't free him sooner. He's exactly right about that. Why not? I have some answers for you on that. President Trump also said he had a great call with Vladimir Putin. And Bernie Sanders lost his friggin' mind today at an anti-education rally, or an anti-cutting the Department of Education rally, or something like that. So we got a lot to get to. Dr. Mike Veneria. What a great guy he is. What a great friend. And I'm thinking about all these wonderful things to smile about. Eagles parade coming up on Friday. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? This is great. We're excited about the parade. We got President Trump in the White House. America's winning. Valentine's Day. So how's your smile doing? If your smile needs any work at all, reach out to Dr. Mike Veneria. You deserve to have a great smile, and Dr. Mike will give you one, give you the smile of your dreams. When it comes to advanced dental work, too, things like dental implants, for example, there's no one better than Dr. Mike Veneria. All you got to do is go to VeneriaDental.com and get your perfect smile book today, including a free implant consultation with Dr. Mike. So what I think is really important here to know is that Dr. Mike is my family dentist. I trust him, and I trust him with my kids, my wife, and of course, Mama Zioli first discovered him for us. And if you're saying to me, Rich, I got a dentist right down the street, go to the best, not the closest. Trust me on this. I learned the hard way by not going to Cooper for my foot. It's the same thing with going to a good dentist, a good doctor. I mean, if you don't, you can pay the price. So make sure you go to the best. That's why for 10 years in a row, 10 consecutive years, Dr. Mike has been ranked as a master of dental implants. And among his peers, they send their patients to Dr. Mike if they can't do it. So make your appointment today for that free implant consultation. Get the smile you deserve. VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Loving being here with you. Loving this. Great stuff. 855-839-1210 is the number on X at Rich Zeoli. Just a programming note. I was going to be off tomorrow. I will be working tomorrow. My surgery on Friday has been moved to next Friday because next week, a couple things are happening that I want to let you know about. Number one. On Thursday, I'll be going to New York to do a Fox News thing, which I'll tell you more about next week. And on Wednesday, special live broadcast. I've been building this up all day, and I hope I have not over exceeded. I have not done any, like, I hope I have not built this up too much, and now it's all going to come crashing down. But a special live broadcast, which is exciting. I'm very, very excited about this. It's been a long time since we've had a chance to do this. And, you know, I think it's going to be really nice. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we are doing a special live broadcast at Ponzio's Diner on Route 70 in Cherry Hill next Wednesday, live show. You can come out and see us. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. And can you imagine if after all that, it was just I'm just doing a broadcast at a diner? Not that I don't love doing diner broadcasts, but after all that buildup, it was just that. People be like, are you serious? Are you freaking kidding me right now? All right. So Wednesday next week, live show. We've been invited by the President of the United States of America himself, through his people, to come and do our show live from a Denny's in Washington, D.C., very close to the White House, where we can take... No, we're doing the show from the White House on Wednesday. All right, fine. Sort of built it up too much, kind of anticlimactic. Like, just say it, just get it out, you know. All right, we're doing the show from the White House on Wednesday. Fine, all right? There you go. You happy now? You people can't keep a secret, can you? Are you happy?
I was excited for that Grand Slam breakfast for a second.
I mean, I was, you know, the egg prices at Denny's, though, I was not looking forward to that live broadcast.
No, very expensive.
So I'm just saying, you know what I mean? I'm just saying. So we're very excited for this. We got invited. It's a media row at the White House. They do this every now and then. Last time was the last time they did it. Actually, I was there, which was 2019, pre-COVID. Last time they ever did a media row, and I was invited. And then I was invited to go to the Oval Office and interview President Trump in an exclusive interview. Now, I don't know if that'll happen this time or not. You never know with media rows, because obviously he's the President of the United States of America, and he's a very busy guy. But it'll be great either way, regardless, because we'll be there for a couple hours, and they'll be bringing through administration officials, and you never know who's going to come by the show and say hello and stop by. Now, it's interesting, because what time are we going to be there, Matt, exactly?
I believe it's 10 a.m. to 1. So 10 to 1. We'll be there for 3 hours, yeah.
We'll be there for 3 hours. Obviously, the show does not start till 3. So the plan is we're going to be there for 3 hours recording interviews and recording a lot of stuff for the show. And then we'll do the show at 3, and you'll get to hear all of this. And, you know, obviously, when these are always fluid things. When you go to the White House, and you never know what's going to happen. Like, I mean, the last time I was there, for example, and the president was, he had a cabinet meeting that day. And Roma Duravi, who is a great friend now, she at the time was giving me the wrap-up thing, and Trump was giving, he was dismissing her, but I was trying to keep him on schedule to go to the cabinet meeting. And, you know, you just never know what's going to come of this. And then that's, of course, the infamous time that then, at the time, we were in mornings, and it was me, Dawn, and Greg, and Don Stensland and I went into the back. He has a private office off of the Oval Office, which he really just uses for storage. He's got all his cool presidential stuff back there. And he handed me a giant silver platter. Beautiful. White House engraved. Beautiful, beautiful thing, which I'm sure probably Doge is cutting now. And he handed Don a little silver candy dish. And then he looks at Don. He looks at me, looks at Dawn, pulls the big dish out of my hand and gives it to Dawn, pulls the little dish out of her hand and gives it to me and goes, you take that one. And that happened, and that's a true story. So there you go. But
that story brings me so much joy.
It really does. They're just like, it's almost as good as him saying, I hope your ratings go to zero. It's almost as good as that. Well, I hope your ratings go to zero. We have to make sure we have it that day, Matches. So if, you know, if we do have the opportunity to interview the president, and there's no guarantee, but we can play that for him and say, well, you know, sorry, it didn't work out for you, but Mr. President, but you won, so... Because of our show, I mean, because of this show is the reason why he's president. Let's be honest. Everybody stayed in line that night. So there you go.
I have Trump saying he hopes your ratings go to zero, by the way.
Let's hear it.
Here it is.
What I'd love to do, I'd love your ratings to go down to zero.
Yeah, no, there's more to it than that.
That's the only important part.
There's more to it than just that.
That's the good part, though.
So I rescheduled my surgery for next Friday. I called up Dr. Malilly today, who's my Dr. Cooper, and I explained the situation to him. He goes, all right, so you're bumping me for President Trump? I said, yeah. He's like, all right, well, I was excited to spend Valentine's Day with you, but I guess we'll have to do it next week. So the plan now is I was going to take off tomorrow and Friday. I'm taking off tomorrow. I'm not taking off tomorrow, so I'll be working tomorrow. Still taking off Friday because it's Eagles Parade and... the heck with it. And then Monday, because it's President's Day, we're probably going to do something with the kids. Because I can still use my foot. So I'm going to be off of my foot for 6 to 12 weeks. We may take them away this weekend and do some fun with them. And then I'll be back. Then Tuesday, just a normal day. Wednesday, live from the White House in Washington, D.C., the home of President Donald Trump. I did tell you I was going to somebody's house. And then Thursday we'll be in New York, Fox News stuff, and then Friday off for the surgery. So there you go. That's it. This coming Friday, Tom Azle will be filling in for me. Great guy, great friend. He has the Old Gravy podcast. And that's how we'll roll. But I'll be here tomorrow, so that'll be good. Is there anyone in the Zioli Army who was surprised when I said we're going to the White House after I spent 3 hours and 45 minutes teasing it? I'm just curious.
I can't imagine that anybody listening to the show earlier hadn't guessed what, in fact, the big surprise was.
Chris Kasmer has a suggestion on Twitter. He says, very exciting news, Rich. If you can't do it at Denny's, see if the White House chef can put together a Moons Over Miami for you guys. The Moons Over Miami is a great dish, by the way, at Denny's. That is one of the good ones. You're right about that. So maybe we'll see. So anyway, we got the funny thing about this is that the email came through last night. I was out having drinks with some of my buddies who took me out for a cigar, some of my Tavistock buddies, before my surgery. It was kind of like a farewell thing, you know, like, hey, you know, you may die. And I'm sitting there having a cigar. And then DeSantis texts me. He goes, hey, did you see the invite from the White House? And I go, "What? No, what are you talking about? He goes, well, we got invited to go to the White House next week to do the show. And I said, what are you talking? No, I didn't see it. So he forwarded me the email. Technically speaking, for the record, I still have not received that. I can't find that email in my email. So it's very possible.
As of right now, you're technically my plus one. So you better be nice to me the next couple days, Rich.
It's very possible Linda Kearns orchestrated some sort of a coup here where Matt DeSantis wound up getting the invite to the White House, and I'm his guest to the White House. I'm his plus one.
I would love for that to be true. They did call me earlier today to confirm that we were planning on attending, and they did mention you specifically, unfortunately. Oh, okay. So I guess the plus one isn't interchangeable. I think I'm stuck with you.
All right, well, that's nice to hear. That's good. That's nice to hear. And we have some friends now who work at the White House, so it'd be nice to see them and catch up. And, you know, last time I got to play press secretary, so maybe I'll get to do that again this time. That was my favorite part of it. I mean, going in the Oval Office and interviewing the president was very cool. I don't want to take away from that. Super cool. But when I got to stand behind the podium and pretend to point at people who aren't in the room, that was also pretty cool, too. To pretend like you're the press secretary.
Is that part of the tour specifically for adults? That sounds like something they do to, like, I don't know, brighten the child's day.
Well, once you're in the White House complex, it's funny. At least that's the way it was back then. I don't know if they've changed it, but you're there. You can just kind of walk around and do anything once you're on the complex. And so they're like, yeah, have fun. Knock yourself out. Do whatever you want. And I'm like, all right. So you go to the press room, you hang out, you walk around the grounds, you like walk through the Rose Garden. Like, what am I doing here? Like, at what point am I going to get thrown off this campus, you know? But yeah, so we'll see what it's like this time around. It'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. And so in case you're just joining us, we'll be live. No, I'm not going to scoot around the West Wing, Newman Pryor. No, I'm not scooting around the West. No. No. Not bringing the scooter. Sheaf was very surprised. Sheaf on the YouTube chat. Yes, that was a total surprise. Very, very, very surprised. Ipso Factor says it would be funny if, as you walk in, DeSantis gets a big welcome and someone whispers while pointing at Rich and says, who invited him? Yeah, probably Trump. Yeah, the ultimate stone breaker would probably be him. But, well, so that's good. So I'm excited. That'll be a lot of fun. It was very cool to get the invite. I figured we would get invited to go to the White House at some point. I honestly didn't think it'd be this fast. But, hey, he's doing everything quickly at lightning pace. So he might as well, invite us now. It's only February. So this is great. It'll be, what day is Wednesday? February, what is that?
The 19th.
February 19th. There you go. Pretty good Valentine's Day. So, yeah. And then on Thursday, we'll be in New York for Fox News stuff. So it'll be good. Good stuff. When did it reopen? The White House? I don't think it ever closed, Edward Sachs. Oh, he's talking about Denny's. Oh, Denny's. Okay. I'm reading the YouTube chat, and Edward Sachs is saying, when did it reopen? And I think 1815, when they rebuilt it after the Brits burned it down. But I think he's talking about Denny's. No, Denny's is still in business, right?
Yeah, they're definitely still around. Yeah. Also, I think Melania Trump actually announced today that the White House is going to reopen for public tours.
Oh, well, but there you go. Imagine if after all this, all it turns out to be is we just got two tour tickets to do the public tour after all this buildup. They're like, hey, you guys, thanks for coming. So start over there in the east. We see the line over there by the east wing. Yeah, just line up over there. We'll be with you in a little bit, you know. Hey, you might get lucky. Maybe you'll get to see POTUS walk through. So does the White House have a wood-fired pizza oven? Maybe that's why I'm there. I can't discuss that. I'm just saying, you know. So, all right. Well, that's the big news. Take a quick break here. We'll come right back. More to come. We still have a lot of show to go, a lot of audio. So don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Will I get a chance to interview President Trump again? I don't know. You never know with these things, but it's just an honor to be invited to participate in a media row. No doubt about it. Oh, bring him an Eagles jersey with a 47 on it. It's not a bad idea. pretty cool idea. I don't know if I have time to make it up, but either way, we'll do the show live from the White House next week, and that's very, very exciting. So, yeah, they'll bring administration officials through, and you never know. You know, you just never know these things. They're always fluid. They're always fun. The nice thing, though, about it is that, and this is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. The nice thing about these opportunities is that, given the fact that he called into the show on election night and we all stayed in line for him and delivered him the presidency in the White House, he, you know, just saying, kind of owes us one. Us being us, all of us, we all, you know what I mean? So anyway, we'll see what happens. You never know. We'll see what happens, but it's going to be fun either way. So what were you going to say, Matt?
Oh, I was just going to say, he did say on election night that if our ratings dropped to zero, he was going to make it up to us.
Well, he did say, I'll make it up to you. He said that, right? I'll make it up to you?
He did, yeah.
All right. And but the ratings didn't go to zero. That's the only problem.
Don't tell him that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get fake ratings data and show him. Be like, look, Mr. President, the minute, as soon as you said that, did you giant goose egg on it, hand it to him. You're like, look, you know. All right, we got a big fourth and final hour coming up for you right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Got a lot of stuff to get into. Tulsi Gabbard, Pam Bondi, the freak out by the left over this constitutional crisis, their fugazi gnashing of teeth. A lot more to come. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.